Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. Wow, has the world changed in a month. This is a podcast about caving, cave exploration, which can be recreational. It can be for the purpose of finding new cave or mapping caves. And so welcome. If it's your first time here, you are more than welcome to be here, whether you are a caver or if you're just thinking about it. If you are thinking about it, though, I've got to tell you this. Caving is not something that you can just jump into without any knowledge of how to do it. You've really got to know what you're doing. It's very safe if you know what you're doing, but quite the opposite if you don't. So I would recommend getting in touch with your local grotto, which is a caving club here in the United States. We call them grottos. Today, we have an international guest from Australia, and they call them just caving clubs there. But anyway, wherever you're listening, there's probably a caving club near you. And you, if you're in the United States, can go to caves.org, which is the National Speleological Society, or NSS's website, and you can find your local grotto there. Again, caving can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, so get in touch with people who know what they're doing and who are willing to take you. Most grottos have a few people that are great with beginners, and if you get hooked up with them, you'll be in good shape. Go a few times. You don't have to join the grotto just yet, but if you like it, then join. Donation, or dues are usually pretty cheap. Like my grotto is $15 a year. And then, of course, if you join the NSS, it's as little as $40 a year. By the way, I've got an El Spelio Terra. That's my new light. El Spelio is a sponsor of the podcast now, and you can get a Terra for $50 off for a limited time. There are still Terras in stock at $50 off. Or if you want to get a different light, all regularly priced headlamps are $20 off with the promo code podcast. Just go to elspelio.com. They are fabulous. The Terra lasts, I mean, I've never had to recharge it. I recharge it after trips, but it's never gone out on me on a trip. Let's just say that. And just really, really high quality stuff. Water resistant to a degree. And in fact, any order at elspelio.com is $20 off when you use the promo code podcast, if that order is of merchandise totaling up to $300 or more. So again, elspelio.com, get a Terra. They're on sale for $50 off, or if you buy something else, as long as you spend at least $300, you can get $20 off by using the promo code podcast. Elspelio.com, or click the link in the description. So yeah, how you doing? Are you bored? Are you home? Are you okay? Are you sick? Do you know anyone who's gotten sick? Goodness gracious, do what we're being asked to do. I've been home all week. I have a job that I still have to do every day, but I've been doing it from home. I'm recording this at home. My job is I'm a radio talk show host here in Indianapolis, and I've been able to do everything from my basement here where I am. And so that's been okay, but some people are really, really hurting. People in the food service industry, and I've gotten to talk with quite a few of those people through the show, and it's just, this is crazy. We have never seen anything like this in our lifetime, and I hope we never do again. And I just hope you're doing okay out there. And, the NSS has guidelines on caving during COVID. Just try to follow those. Look those up at caves.org, the NSS website. And of course, you may have gotten an email from Gary Schindel, the president of the NSS. He sent out guidelines on caving while COVID. So check that out. So Cillianello is a listener of the podcast from Australia. She originally reached out to talk to us about the what did she call it? Well, she was raising money for the restoring karst areas due to the terrible bushfires. The news item from earlier this year and late last year, the terrible bushfires which have been devastating Australia. And so you can still give to that, although the GoFundMe for that is closed. We'll get to that in just a second. No caving for me. I haven't been caving a lot in the last month, but I hope to very, very soon. And by the way, Are your calendars still up in the air? Actually, I have a Grotto meeting tonight. We're going to do a virtual Grotto meeting over Zoom or something like that. But if you have a caving event that your Grotto is putting on that you have found that you've had to postpone, I'd love to be able to announce it on the podcast. Just go to, well, just send me an email, alpineproductions@gmail.com, alpineproductions@gmail.com. I know Spelio Fest, everything that I've seen is still on for May 22nd through the 25th at Lone Star Preserve, although that seems a little close. I mean, look, don't let me tell you what to do, Louisville Grotto, but if you have thought about moving that, or if any other grottos have thought about moving or postponing or canceling any events, I'd like to know about it so I can get the word out. So, yeah, please let me know. Again, alpineproductions@gmail.com. A listener and supporter of the podcast has asked me to highlight a different karst conservancy every month. And this month, I'm going to specifically highlight the effort to save Cyclops Cave. Scott McRae, who is the owner and founder of Swago, who used to be a sponsor of this podcast and still very, a very dear friend, of course, helped to discover Cyclops Cave in Virginia. And it was where a kind of a big deal rescue happened last year. And you can, well, actually, SCCI, the Southeastern Cave Conservancy, are hoping to purchase the cave, and they need to raise $150,000 within 1 month. May the 1st is their deadline. So if you can help the SCCI purchase Cyclops Cave, which is an incredible cave, it's just over 7 miles. There's still some potential for growth in Cyclops Cave, and it's number 11 on Virginia's longest cave list, 126 on the U.S. longest cave list, and it's a really, really significant cave, a lot of really beautiful formations, and a really fun exploration history. So if you want to help save Cyclops Cave, you can go to savecyclops.org. Easy to remember, savecyclops.org. That'll direct you to saveyourcaves.org, which is SCCI's website, and their Save Cyclops Cave webpage. And there you can donate. And I really, really hope that you will. Again, they've got $150,000 to raise within the next month to buy Cyclops Cave in Russell County, Virginia. So I hope that you can do that, even if things are tight right now. If they're tight for you, maybe somebody else can give. And if you are giving and you are in a position to give, just know that not everybody is. This is not coming at a great time for the SCCI because of the hit that the economy is taking. So if you're able, give generously to the SCCI so they can buy Cyclops Cave. Okay, Syl Ianello, an Australian caver. She was such a delight to talk to. Obviously, for the American listeners, her accent is a lot of fun, and she is so knowledgeable too. She was so great to just, it was nice to hear a perspective from a place I know nothing about. And that shows through that I know nothing about it. In a few of the silly questions that I asked, or a few of the admissions that I didn't know of places that she was talking about. But you know what? We're all learning together, aren't we? Here is me and Syl Ianello. Syl, welcome to the Caving Podcast.
Thank you.
All the way from Australia. Where are you right now? Okay, you're 16 hours ahead of me. I'm on Eastern Time, and that's GMT plus 5, and or rather GMT minus 5? It doesn't matter, but you're GMT like plus 19 or something like that.
Yeah, so it's quarter to 1 in the afternoon, and I'm in the state of Victoria. In Australia, which is very south, and I live quite close to the coast, and right now I'm sitting on a property with lots of gum trees and a river flowing behind. It's beautiful. Oh,
I'm trying to picture it. And it's summer down there, of course, and it's winter here.
It is. It is. Yeah, I live on the Victorian volcanic plains. So lots and lots of lava caves around me, basically.
And is that where you've been your entire life or most of your life?
No, I moved from the city out to the country about 3 years ago. Got sick of the city life.
But how far is that? How far was that from where you are now?
It's only about an hour and a half.
Oh, okay. So not far at all.
No, not far at all. But it's beautiful.
Yeah. So when did you get started caving?
I got started caving. Well, I was like some of your other people that you've interviewed. They started caving, show caving, basically, before I even knew what caving was or how it existed. I was about in my early 20s, and I did an adventure cave tour in New Zealand. I don't know if you've heard of the Waitomo Caves.
With the glow worms, I'm sure.
Yeah, so you do this black water rafting trip on the Black Labyrinth Cave, and basically you get given a black tube, like a tire tube. You get given I think it's like a 7 mil wetsuit because the water's absolutely freezing, gloves and full kitted up. And, you basically go adventure caving. And then one section of the cave is you hop into the water and you start to explain that you all get into a single file line and you link your legs up together under each person's under their arm. So you're kind of in a chain. And then you just go through this tunnel and you look up and you turn all your lights off and you're literally looking at thousands and thousands of glowworms in the ceiling. And it's just it looks like you're looking at a constellation or the galaxy. It's pretty amazing. But still then I didn't know that caving was a thing. I just thought it was a tour thing until I went to the Jenolan Caves, which is in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, which is, you would have heard about it on the news. It's been severely burnt because of the bushfires. Mm. And then so I did the Jubilee Cave, gorgeous cave, heaps of decorations. And we went past one little area that was blocked off. And I said to the guide, "So are we going to go that way?" She's like, "No, if you want to go that way, you need to be part of a caving club or you need to be a caver." And I was like, "Okay, what's that about?" So I quizzed her more about it. And then basically the moment I left Jenolan region, I was online looking for the club, basically, which was the Victorian Speleological Association, which is the – you call them grottos, but we call them caving clubs.
That was going to be my next question, what you called them. Because when I first got involved, I thought, why do you call them grottos? And now it's just second nature to me.
Yeah. No, we call them caving clubs. So there's about roughly about 24 in Australia. And you guys have the NSS. We have the ASF.
All right.
And so it's, all those clubs come under that.
Which stands for?
The Australian Speleological Federation.
Federation. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and then I joined my first caving club, VSA, and then in 2009, which was a long time ago. And I've been caving ever since and joined the committee as you do and, do all the things you do in a club and, go caving, basically.
And so when you're talking about like trips that really got you interested, I mean, obviously you went and you did some wild caving and you said, well, can I go that way? And no, you got to be a part of a club.
Yeah.
What really got you going on it?
Well, you've heard of a place called Tasmania.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where all the amazing caves are.
Or is that true? Like a lot of the limestone is there, or is it different kinds of caves?
Yeah, it's limestone.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of different – there's the south and then there's the north. And so what got me hooked was in the north, which is the Mole Creek caving area, you could call it. And then – so there's a – which I call the baby of Lurcher Gear Cave.
Oh, is that right? Why is that?
Well, it's not as extensive as Lurcher Gear by any means, because I know that one of the branches in Lurcher Gear to get to the first camp is like 12 hours. This is basically can be a 12-hour trip, and then, it's either a through trip or a bounce trip, which is called, the cave's called Kublai Khan. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I feel like I have.
It's pretty amazing. And the most spectacular part that I like was the Pleasure Dome and also the actual Khan itself. The cave's huge. It's just lots of crystal formations and lots of massive, massive rimstone pools. I mean, besides Kublai Khan, one of my favorites is, it's only a little cave. It's not as extensive as that, but it's called Tail Ender, which all my friends know. It's one of my favorite caves. I just keep going back all the time to that place. It's got a bit of everything. It's got decorations. It's wet. It's got lots of crawly bits. It has a little vertical pitch to get into the back entrance, and then the whole back entrance is just like a hobbit's house. And then you get right into the back, and it's just shelves and shelves of absolutely stunning helictites and just amazing decorations. Sometimes I'm just like, how did you become that, spastic? Like, the decorations are just, they just go everywhere. It's beautiful.
So with Kublai Khan, you say it's like, it's kind of like your Let You Get. It's not like it formed the same way. It's just, is it that it's highly decorated, or did it form the same way?
It's massive. Like, it's just a really big cave, and it's highly decorated, highly, highly decorated. There's lots of pools you can swim in, and yeah, it's just a really nice long cave system. I don't know how long it is, but It's a big trip though. Yeah, and there's a couple of vertical pitches in it as well. Pull through trip.
Is that one still like being explored, or is that one pretty much caved out?
I hope I've got it right. I think it's been completely explored now and mapped. And if I'm correct, the Southern Tasmanian Cavaniers, STC, the caving club that have done a lot of that exploration and mapping.
Is it an exclusive cave? Is it like, is it hard to get into?
Yeah, so from memory, I think you're only allowed a few trips a year in that cave, so you have to be quite organized, and there's only a couple of a few trip leaders, from my understanding. So we had David Wilcobbs. He took me through, and yeah, he's just an awesome guy, and had lots of fun with him.
But Tail Ender, been plenty of trips in there.
Yeah, it's still a permit cave, so you need to get a key and organise all that through parks. But again, you just need to be organised, and you need to be part of a caving club, and you need a leader as well that knows the cave. But I know it now, so enough to take a group through.
You said it's got a little bit of everything, which I would imagine as a caver who's been at it as long as you have, you like a little bit of everything. But what makes a really good trip for you, I guess?
Okay. I guess I like to have fun on my trip. So I guess my team, the group I'm with, that I would say that makes a really good trip. And then also just having...
Well, like, I guess what I'm trying to ask is like the kind of cave. Like, some people don't like a lot of crawling, or some people do like a lot of crawling, and some people like a lot of vertical, and some people don't. That kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So I like a little bit of crawling, but not too much. I do prefer big cave with highly decorated cave. I quite like wet caves as well. You know, good swim, dripping. You know, when you turn your light off, close your eyes, you can just hear the drips in the cave. That's really beautiful. Any kind of reflections of the rimstone, you know, of the pools. You know, just going deeper and deeper into the caves, they all show me different things. So a bit of vertical is good as well. Yeah, and just the people as well.
And so you've also gotten really involved in cave conservation as well.
I have. So I studied in my environmental science degree a few years ago now, and because in the third year of the degree, you can do a science project, basically, that will go for the whole year, and you can do it on anything you want. And at that time, I was also cave guiding, actually, for a company in Granite Caves in Victoria. We have lots of different types of caves or caving areas, as granite, lava, and limestone. But I was particularly in the granites area, and I just noticed like the whole tourism putting people through wild caves, how it really does impact on the fauna and the flora as well on the land, on the surface. And so I really got into trying to preserve and show more awareness to these sensitive caving areas. So I did a study on one of the granite caves, and yeah, so that turned into a publication as well, and also finding a undescribed species of cave cricket. Or new species. It was sample was taken and looked at quite extensively, and the nearest cricket species to that one is about 250 kilometers away. So that was pretty exciting, unexpected, because I was not expecting that from the study. So I did a presence and absence study, you know, what fauna was there in the certain areas of the cave. It is granite caving. I don't know what you think of granite caves.
Well, that's just the thing. I was going to ask about that. I was going to lead into that, because it's got to be a lot different.
It is. It's like the underdog of caving, basically.
How do you mean?
Because, I don't know, limestone caves, you know, are generally, when you think of caves, people think limestone caves and the decorations and, you know, how beautiful they are and how extensive they can be. I guess with granite caves where I am, you just imagine a whole bunch of granite boulders sitting on the valley side slopes and just falling into the creek. And then over time, the creek gets washed away, all the debris get washed away, and it basically leaves, you know, multiple different entrances. You have different types of habitats, different fauna. You know, you have fauna that can get in from the surface, but then you have other fauna as well, that, like the cave crickets, that prefer to stay in the cave, but, you know, just go outside for a bit to do their thing, and then they come back. So it's just, you know, because when you go into limestone caves, you typically find all the fauna within the entrance areas, unless you're looking into the stygofauna. But the granite caves open themselves up to all nooks and crannies. You can have creatures living all over the place, even in the dark zone. So, yeah, it's and the granite is you know, they're big, massive boulders. It's just like a playground.
With just like cracks and spaces for you to get through, and that's why it's called a cave, essentially?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's a cavern. Yeah, yeah. It is. It has all the zones. It has the entrance zone. It has the twilight zone. It has the transition zone. And it has a dark zone. So if you have all those, I guess it's considered a cave. And it has all those zones. And I guess to do the study, you know, we had to survey it as well. So I got a team together, and we surveyed that cave, and then I could do the study even more extensively, which then led me to do another project survey of another granite cave, which is bigger than that one. And that's been really good, because that was inspired. There's quite a lot of rescues in the granite caves.
Why is that?
Because they're more accessible to closer to urban areas. They're not so. Some of the limestone for me is about 6 hours away, and the granites are like closer to urban towns, I guess. And they're not gated, and lots of people know where they are. So, unfortunately, you do get your, what do they call them, spelunkers? Is that what you call them?
Yeah, that's what we call them. Spelunkers, cowboy cavers.
Yeah, so they go in with, you know, a couple of tinnies and mobile phones, you know, and they, you know, some of these granite caves can be quite complicated. Once you get in, it can get very disorientated very quickly.
I imagine.
Limestone, you know, you can see how it's been cut away, and you can see a way but the granite caves, yeah, these particular ones, very disorientated very quickly. So if you don't have your wits about you or don't have the right gear, which, you know, happens all the time. So the inspiration for that particular granite cave to survey it was to help emergency services, basically, to have a survey of the cave so they can go in and, you know, rescue people. The last one, there was two guys in there for like, I think it was 3 days or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and they were like in the pits, as we call it, the pits.
Wow.
Well, yeah, they were quite far in, so it's very easy to get disorientated. Yeah, so that's my, I guess, my project caving, my own personal project caving. And then, you know, and just from doing all that, you know, you get a bit of attention from the media because they want to know, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah, the Herald Sun talked to you, right?
Yeah, the Herald Sun, the club got a, because I've been program organizer, or was, and so we, you know, you get correspondence in, and they wanted to do a story on, you know, something interesting, I guess, to do with caves. And so I put my hand up. So I liked how they, I don't know if you've seen the article, but it says, her face appears through a hole no bigger than a bucket.
Yeah, yeah, that's how it starts.
So, and then, yeah, so that went a bit viral. And then it's like I was in some place, I was in Robe in South Australia along the limestone coast on a trip, and I got a call at like 6 a.m. from a radio station saying, oh, we've just seen the newspaper article, can we do a radio interview? I'm like, what? How did you even get my number? So I did one with them, and then the women's magazine, Shape magazine, got in touch as well, and I was pretty happy about to do that because it's just good to be a bit of a role model for all the young women, you know, wanting to get into caving or any sport that they want and that they can do it. So
what's the ratio like there in Australia? It's got to be, I would imagine it's similar to what it is here in the United States, that there's just a lot more men that do it. But I don't know. Is it any different there?
Well, I'm in a couple of different clubs because I basically live on the border of Victoria and South Australia. And both clubs I have, I think they've got a pretty good mix of
really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I would say that they do. I would say there's a good mix of women and really good women cavers. Like there's some really good expedition cavers, you know, in Tassie for sure, and also in New South Wales as well. There's some good cavers, women cavers too, doing some good stuff from the Metropolitan Speleological Society, which I'm going to go on a trip with them to Tassie soon, actually. So, yeah, no, there's some amazing women cavers in Australia.
You mentioned rescue a little bit ago. Are you involved in rescue at all, cave rescue?
I am. I've just only recently got started in cave rescue. So Victoria has one. It's the in Gippsland for the Buchan region. That's another area that got highly burnt. So I've done one training session with them where I was patient manager. that was pretty good experience. So that was all basically vertical work as well. You know, there was different teams. There was a team up on the surface, and then I was in the team that was in the cave. Yeah, I stayed with the patient and went up with the patient as well. Right, so we got her out. And then just recently STC put on a big cave rescue training in Growling Swallet, which is quite an extensive system. If I'm correct, it's like 23.5 kilometres long, with a depth of about 397 meters or something. Looking
wow.
At, yeah, yeah. So that's recently been connected with, so Growling Swallet and Niggly. So that's been one of the latest big things by a diver and a team. So, yeah, but that was a recent rescue in there. Seven teams. We all had different areas of the cave where we all had different jobs to do, mainly setting up. It's just like, you know, it's got underground, you know, waterfalls and passages and all sorts of huge vertical areas in there, and running Terraleans right through the whole cave as well. So each section, each team had to do that to get the stretcher across. And yeah, I think that
was... Wow, that's a massive amount of rigging.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I hope I'm correct. I think it was 600 meters we were in. I was more at the start of the cave, setting up our system. But each section of the rescue had some Terraleans set up to cross water or
wow.
a big pit or, you know, and going through dry passage as well. There was in total, from memory, it was 47 people underground. It's
oh my
huge.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. And it was 13 hours. Members from all over different clubs came to join in and, you know, get experience as well. Like myself, I haven't done anything that big before. So, yeah, I was pretty tired by the end of it. But I had a really good team and I learned lots of stuff and lots about rigging and, you know, how exhausting, I guess, a rescue could be for an individual and how you really got to, you know, take care of yourself as well, you know, at the same time trying to get this person out of the cave quickly and safely. And yeah,
I've done one mock rescue ever, and it just gave me a whole new appreciation for people who do it. I do recommend any kind of rescue training for anybody, just so that they know the level of work and planning and organization that has to go into it once something like that happens.
It was huge. And Alan Jackson, who's from STC, you know, organized the mock rescue. If you can talk to anyone, you can talk to him. He's a good person to have on the show, I reckon. He'll probably kill me for saying that. But he can tell you more about, you know, what they do. I'm not in that club, but that club's pretty good. They do some amazing stuff. That rescue, I think it was approximately about 13 hours. But if it was a real rescue, it might have been a few days, because you probably would need a few more teams or people, you know, leaving to have a break, then coming back and doing some more work, you know. And it all depends on the patient as well and the condition the patient is. That's the other thing, you know, sometimes, like, I've never been in a real rescue but it depends what's wrong with if they've broken their leg, or it just depends. It might take a lot longer than 13 hours. So I think Emily's was a couple days, I think it was.
Four days. If I remember correctly, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there you go. So, yeah. yeah, you know, it can take days, you know.
Wow.
But, like, I just think mock rescue training, certainly I've done two now. Again, it opened my eyes up to the efforts that need to go into getting the person out.
So what are some other projects that you've been involved with where either you found something cool or that you were just really proud to be involved with?
Yeah, so I've done a 3-week expedition on the Nullarbor. Do you know the Nullarbor?
Well, no, I 3 weeks. I mean, not 3 weeks underground, but...
No, not underground. It was 3 weeks in the desert.
3 weeks and it's still.
So every year, I think it's been going on for 20 years. VSA, they do it every year. They go to the Nullarbor. The club also has a ultralight aeroplane, which Ken Boland, he's a cool guy. We set up a landing strip, an aeroplane landing strip.
So, wow.
Yeah, so he goes up with his GPS and he surveys in the air all the features. He GPSs all the features that you see and then comes down, that gets loaded up into everyone's GPS, and then you basically go out on foot or on motorbike and you go and check out all the features and you either go in or survey them, or it could be just a feature and you just write up the information about the feature you're seeing. So I'm quite little and petite, so guess where I was going? I was going.
You get to go through all the tight stuff. Great, yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. And I was, there are a lot of an older crew that go. So I think I was the youngest by 35 years. I think the.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the oldest caver, I think he was 80.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some keen cavers in Australia. Like, they're still going. Nothing stops.
Well, isn't
them.
That funny about cavers? I mean, the people who stick with it for a long time, because we have some American cavers who are as old or thereabouts and who are still doing it as well. I mean, you think about caving and the amount of physical stamina and core strength that it takes and how fit you have to be in order to be able to do it. And as long as you keep doing it, it's like the people who live the longest are the people who have a purpose in life. And caving for some people is strong enough to be that purpose. And it's just incredible how long people are able to do it.
Oh, I'd like to be still doing it in some capacity when I'm a lot older. I think it would be good. So
yeah,
some of these older crew, I'll call them, they have a lot of knowledge and they've found some amazing things, some amazing caves. You know, like Tail Ender, for example, just randomly I met Henry and he found it. So, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I get to meet Henry on the Nullarbor trip. So he was still, you know, still surveying and, you know, still going. But, yeah, they're very active cavers. Going in, basically all the stuff that you're doing on the Nullarbor is all new. Yeah, you're finding all new stuff. If I go into a little hole, no one's ever been, well, I won't say no one, but, you know, it hasn't been explored or visited. It's the first time that we're doing it. So it's a good trip to go on. Different, but good exploration, 3 weeks. And then there's the whole, you know, camping. You have to bring everything in as well. Bring all your firewood in or your, you know, you've got to set up a full camp kitchen, shared meals. You know, there's a whole other side of, you know, a 3 week long expedition besides the caving and going out, you know, is all the other stuff you've got to organize as well, which is part of the whole experience. So
you got to shape your whole life around something like that.
You do. And I work full time, so I wish I could do more expedition stuff. But yeah, it's very hard to fit stuff like that in. So yeah, I will get better at it, I guess, because I would like to go to Borneo in 2021. So,
oh boy! Yeah.
So I've got to get ready for that, along with every other thing that goes on. So yeah.
Well, okay. So the United States is a lot more densely populated than Australia. You know, there are a few areas that are similar. So I would imagine that there are quite a few more frontiers in Australia, perhaps maybe than the continental United States. Where are the frontiers? You mentioned that southern portion where you did the 3 week expedition, but where else and who's looking at it?
Well, that's a good question. There is stuff up in Western Australia. It's called the Bulleter. That's a quite extensive area, and there's different caving clubs get together, which they go and do some exploration of the Bulleter caves. Gregory, Northern Territory. Yep, I got that right. That's good. Phew.
Anytime you hear, I mean, when I hear something like called something territory, I think, okay, yeah, nobody lives up there.
Yeah. Oh, no. People do live in the Northern Territory, but I guess with Bulleter Cave, that's been going on for many years, the exploration of that, and they're still pushing that cave and mapping it. It's quite extensive. I haven't been on a Bulleter trip. My name is on the list, though, for this year. I'm waiting for someone to pull out, basically. So once I can get on that trip, then I guess I can talk more about it. But there's a lot of exploration happening on the Bulleter trip. There's Bungonia. New South Wales has Bungonia, Wombeyan, Yerangabilly, and the Jenolan area. And again, there's so many different clubs in New South Wales, and then they all do their bits in there. But I guess here in Victoria, for me, it's mainly the Buchan area, which is, being quite extensively looked at. And then there's other areas like the volcanics that have also been extensively looked at.
You've talked about a few places that you've had your eye on and places that you've heard about and would like to go. And you talked about going to Borneo next year. What are some other caves that you've had your eye on for a while that you really want to go to, but don't have any plans to go to yet?
There's an area that you talk about in your podcast that I've been looking at. Actually, it's called TAG.
Yeah, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia.
Is that what it is? Okay.
So, that's why they call it that. Yeah, it's the three states. It's where those three states meet in the southern United States.
So TAG would be a good place to go to.
Just you want to come? All right, yeah.
Just because I've learned so much about it, just listening to your podcast, and I've actually joined the TAG Facebook group so I can start meeting some people.
Well, you know about TAG, right? It's a lot of deep pits. That's where the best vertical caving, some of the best vertical caving is in the continental United States.
Wow.
And so are you a vertical junkie as well?
I can be. Yeah, I can be. It's just in Victoria, there's not so much big, deep stuff. So a lot of the deep stuff you need to go to Tassie for. Well, I would say you go to Tassie. So I'm trying to do more there. It's just time, I guess, and money to just go and do stuff. But if I am doing vertical, I think we talk in meters. So I think I've done up to maybe 50 or 60 meters, which is quite big. But typically, on a typical trip that I would do maybe 20 or 30. But then it's just not a single pitch going in. You know, there might be multiple other areas within the cave you need to do an abseil. Also, lately I've been doing a bit of canyoning as well, you know, which is a whole nother ball game when it comes to vertical.
Oh, I know.
You know, yeah. So I live, like I said, I live near the coast, near the Otways, and I can get out more there and do some canyoning. It's a whole nother set of skills that I'm learning at the moment. So I don't mind vertical at all. Getting to some of the most amazing places, you need your vertical skills. So it's just got to keep scrubbing up on them. That's my thing. So I've got to keep practicing and practicing and practicing. Yeah.
Have you been to the US for any caving at all?
No, I haven't been to the USA
at all.
No, I've never been there. No.
Ah, there's a lot more to do here than caving, but caving is good here.
Yeah, the only things that I know about US caves is from basically learning from your podcast and from what I've, from what I've read. I guess like I've said to you, Hazel Barton is an inspiration for me and
and for so many of us.
and I'd like to go work in her lab as a scientist.
Oh, I know.
So I'm doing other things at the moment as well besides caving. working on the do you have the cave animal of the year in America?
We do not, to my knowledge.
No? Okay. So we do in Australia.
All right.
I think the Cave Animal of the Year initiative started in 2009, and it was all about increasing awareness of the animals and the importance of caves and their homes. You know, this year it was the Australian cave cricket.
Oh, back to cave crickets. We've come full circle.
Yeah, I know. I'll always talk about cave crickets. I think everyone knows about that.
Okay, so I want to come back to that about cave animal of the year, but I want you to, to the best of your ability, describe the kind of cave crickets you're talking about, because we have a few different kinds here, and there aren't many in Indiana where I am, you know, just sort of south of Lake Michigan. way south from Lake Michigan. But then when you cross the Ohio River into Kentucky, they're everywhere. And so it's just kind of funny. And there are several different kinds. So what do yours look like?
Well, ours are the actual cave crickets. I know that the research I've done about on the cave crickets, when America comes up, you guys hate them.
I don't.
Yeah, you want to kill them. You're like,
no.
You got cricket sprays, and oh, you know, they're in the basement and they're all over.
Oh yeah,
the
there are people who just don't like bugs, and I'm not fond of those people. But when you get cavers, and usually cavers are people who just like critters, and so they'll go into caves, yeah. And you know, we'll see them, and then you know, we won't bother them or anything. Some of us
no.
do,
So the crickets here, they're a humpback as well, similar to what you have in America. Mm. They have a life in the cave, and they also have a life outside the cave as well, particularly the ones in America, because they mate outside the cave, because I've read all about them. Their mating rituals, they have a very interesting life. But ours... our cave cricket species, we've got to start off with saying, you know, talking about they were described and named by entomologist and speleologist Dr. Ayala Richards. You know, and she was educated in New Zealand, and she was actually the first New Zealand woman to gain a PhD in biology in 1956. And she documented the Australian cave cricket, their diet, circadian rhythms and habitat preferences. And, yeah, so her research provided basically critical information for the protection and awareness of cave habitats in Australia and New Zealand. And so our Australian cave crickets, highly specialised insects, they originated about 100 million years ago before the breakup of the supercontinent Gondwana. They're known scavengers, I guess. They're cannibalistic. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah, so they eat plants and they eat other animals. And
how big are they? Are they particularly large? Because the ones south of the Ohio River, I'm in Indiana and we're north of the Ohio, and the ones down in Kentucky, they get pretty big. Like,
yeah.
They can fill the palm of your hand in some cases.
Oh, no, they're not that big. That's like New Zealand, like the cave witters. They're huge. No,
yeah.
These guys probably little finger, like... They're not that big, but they have long antennae, really, really long antennae. Yeah, and huge, big hind legs for jumping. So, and they're wingless. So, you know, cave crickets don't have wings, so they don't chirp. And they play a pretty important role when there's no bats as well through their guano. And so they're pretty amazing little creatures, and you can find them in clusters on the cave walls. And, you know, they're like brownie coloured, stripy, or blotchy golden colours on them. And they're quite prevalent mainly in the entrance areas. But like I was saying about the granite caves, they're just everywhere. So it's pretty amazing. Part of the Australian Cave Animal of the Year, I'm working on a little film on them as well, an educational film, which is pretty exciting.
when are you planning on getting that one finished?
The film, just finishing up on the script right now, and we're going to go to the World Heritage area of the Nowracourt Caves. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I have not.
Yeah, so we're going to go into fossil caves. So the Nowracourt Cave area is the World Heritage Area, and it's typically known for the preserved fossil deposits of megafauna, like the marsupial lion and the Diprotodon, which is like the big giant wombat.
So, wow.
Yeah, like large vertebrate species, and they normally get the public's attention. So, but we're going to try and focus on, you know, the little things about the cave. So the cave cricket. So we'll get the shots of it in its habitat and of it itself. I don't want to give too much away.
Right. We'll wait for it.
Yeah. So that's a follow-up project to go with the Australian Cave Animal of the Year initiative. which is pretty exciting. There's a good team of people helping on that as well, which is pretty good. So that's that. And then there's this bushfire appeal that I've that I've initiated.
Well, so we have heard, obviously, in the last couple of months or month and a half or so, we've heard so much about it, and there's no shortage of people here that are trying to do something about it, and we're all just kind of wondering how bad it is and how much it's affecting you. And so from McCaver's perspective, how bad is it?
So basically, you call them wildfires, but, you know, we call them bushfires. You know, we've had bushfires forever. This year, Southern Australia has never been burnt so much in a single summer season. So we've had, you know, lots of karst areas like Western Australia, New South Wales, Victoria and South Australia. Karst areas just get completely burnt. It's been really difficult, I guess, to at the moment know the scale of it, I guess, because there's still the fires. Most of the fires are extinguished now. We've had lots of rain, and what comes after the fires, because the landscape's been complete, you know, being burnt out, when the rains come, just creates another effect, which is landslides, because all the hillsides are basically denuded, and it gives way to, you know, movement of soil and rocks. So that's also happened as well since the fires have been, since have happened. So we've had, there's been two things that have happened, not just the fires. And so in Victoria, the Buchan area has only just recently opened. So I'm due to go there on the weekend and going suss out some of the damage to the landscape. I'm particularly interested in the habitats, cave habitats, and the, you know, the bats and also the crickets and spiders and other animals. So I want to go and see what's going on there. Yeah, New South Wales, you know, the Jenolan area, it's been also extensively burnt and also has had that rain event. But I guess the rain is good too, because, you know, the caves become a lot active. They've been quite dry. New formations will start, so we could take a positive from that. And the other thing is, it does open up vast areas where we can go looking for some new caves as well.
But at the same time, I would imagine that silting and filling is a problem as well.
Absolutely. So that's it. I still haven't had the report on what condition some of the known caves are in New South Wales. So when the fires kicked off, I contacted the ASF and said, can we start up a cave landscape bushfire rehabilitation appeal? And so we did. I was inspired to do that because I know that we're going to need some funding to roll out a whole heap of projects for when we can actually get in. And one of those projects could be, you know, caves that have been filled in to open them up again. You know, that could be a project, or cleaning or restoring the karst area, smoke damage, or fencing, stabilization. It's going to be a lot of revegetation that's going to need to happen. There'll be natural revegetation. However, depending on the area, we'll need some replanting for habitat as well. And then, you know, long-term projects for bushfire impact on fauna and cave environments. I just thought it was absolutely crucial that we have something, so when caving clubs can start getting out into the areas and start thinking about projects, they can apply for the funding, which will be quite immediate as well. The Karst Conservation Fund will still be open, so you can still donate to that, but the GoFundMe page will close up. But, yeah, I just want to say thank you to everyone that has donated from all around the world. It's just been absolutely amazing. Quite a lot of money raised, which is really, really good to see. So it's quite a niche. Yeah, it's quite a niche thing, but it's really good to see that that's happened. yeah, it'd be just good to when clubs can get out and go and start assessing, you know, and start putting the projects in. You know, like in Buchan, like in East Gippsland, severe fires there, they burnt out the show cave area and numerous other reserves and a lot of infrastructure and farms and houses as well. And then in New South Wales, the worst area burnt was the Jenolan Caves. So, and then in South Australia, you would have seen on Kangaroo Island, the complete loss of the Cali wow. Hill Show Caves infrastructure and lots of support and funding to go into those parks, park management, to get all that rebuilt, because they're all tourism areas as well. So imagine that they'll want to try and get all that up and running as quick as they can. Look, I think it's going to take a very long time to get it all up and going again, but it will. You know, lots of different levels to what's happened. You know, there's also towns and people, you know, so just got to be really sensitive about how we approach these things as well and support as much people, locals as well. So if you're going into the cast, if you go into these caving areas, you know, like personally, I won't bring any food. I won't go shop. I won't, you know, load my car up. I'll just shop in town and, you know, eat out in town and, you
support
know,
the area. Yeah.
Yeah, support the local area. Yeah, and there's lots of people doing that at the moment. So, my whole inspiration to try and get an appeal up and running. And
well,
so,
I appreciate that you've done it, and I appreciate all the people who have given to it. So what's the next big project? What are you looking forward to doing soon? Other than Borneo next year.
So we have the Australian Speleological Federation 2021 Cave Conference in Ceduna in South Australia.
Aha.
Yeah. So I was saying before, I've got a couple of clubs. I'm with the Flinders Uni Speleological Society. And so, yeah, the SA clubs, there's Kegsa and Fussy, we call them. So, yeah, we've got together and there's a big committee and we're all working on delivering that cave conference next year. So that's definitely the next big project, and just keep going caving. Yeah, I would like to get to Tasmania more and do some stuff there.
And yeah, we got to get you to the United States too.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I want to get to the United States. I want to go to the USA, and I want to go to Tag.
Yeah, come down to Tag. I want to go back to Tag too. I think June 2015 was the last time I was there.
Yeah, and what's your favorite caving area in Tag?
Well, I've only been to Tag three or four times, I've loved it every single time, so I don't know that I could give you my favorite area, but I could give you the best place I've been so far down there, and that's a cave called Flowing Stone Cave, just because the people I was with, and also it was my first really deep pit. It's about 220 feet, which I guess would be about 70 meters or so. And it's a really tiny hole in the bottom of a kind of a nondescript sinkhole. And then you've kind of got to worm your way through some rocks. And then it's just the thing just bells out. And I remember as I was rappelling or abseiling down, I'm next to what looks like a wall. And then that wall comes to a point. And then I see that wall, and I hope I'm remembering this correctly. I'm sure I'll be corrected by people who have been there a lot more than I have, or maybe more recently. But I remember this wall coming to a point, and what I thought was a wall was actually a giant flowstone formation.
Wow.
That was essentially an enormous stalactite. And then it's just a huge room, and I get to the bottom, and it's rimstone dams, giant black salamanders in them, and then this huge, just an incredibly huge room. So, and there's no shortage of stuff like that all over down in Tag. And so, yeah, that's been my best Tag experience so far.
Oh, yes. Just the way you explain it, it's great.
I mean, I want to go back there, but I also know that there's plenty more like that. So I'm sure any other place I could go would be just as great. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, that's my favorite. And of course, I live in Indiana, which is much farther north than Tag, but we've got great caves here too. A lot of wet caves. So a lot of wetsuit trips, but, yeah. And then out west is all the dry stuff. But
yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing. There's one other thing that I just remembered, if that's okay, about when you just asked me about what else I'm going to be doing. I think my focus will be the rehabilitation of the landscape and all the caving areas I can get to post-fire and working hard to survey and, you know, just do some projects for the restoration of those caves in whatever project that is, cave cleaning or revegetation. So that will be a focus this year, definitely.
Well, we'll keep our eyes on what you're doing there and what the rest of the ASF is doing post-bushfires. I'm really glad that you're involved, and I really, really hope that the damage, I guess, can be mitigated or is maybe perhaps at least kept to some sort of a minimum.
Thank you.
Well, Syl, I really appreciate your time. This has been great. Thank you so much. You're my second international guest.
No pressure.
No, none whatsoever. And I want to talk to more. I've heard from some people in the UK and elsewhere, and so I'd like to get more international guests on. But I really appreciate you reaching out. You initially just reached out to talk about the GoFundMe, and I said, hey, I kind of hooked you and said let's do one. And so I'm so glad that you did.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Me too.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Matt. And, have fun and keep caving.
Thank you, Syl. What a great time. Thank you so much for reaching out. Syl reached out to me to tell me about the Australian... what do they call it? She just said it a little bit ago. The Australian Speleological Federation and their GoFundMe that has since closed on the bushfires rehabilitation project. But you can still give to the ASF's Conservation Fund, which you can do at caves.org.au. Again, caves.org.au. And I have a link in the description of this podcast that you can click if you want to give to that as well. Again, this month's Karst Conservancy is, well, it's the SCCI, but specifically it's the Save Cyclops Cave Initiative, which you can do, which you can donate to at SaveCyclops.org. All one word, SaveCyclops.org. And again, El Spelio, thanks to El Spelio for sponsoring the podcast. The Terra light is $50 off right now. Or if you want to buy another light, all regularly priced headlamps are $20 off if you use the promo code podcast at checkout. Or any order, really, of $300 or more will be $20 off if you use that promo code podcast. And thanks to all sponsors of the program, past and present, Organic Robot on Etsy. Charlie's doing a great job with t-shirts. Go to the Etsy store, Organic Robot, all one word. And of course, Swago, Scott McRae, who is also behind the Save Cyclops project with SCCI. They need to raise $150,000 before May 1st, and I hope we can do it. We can with your help. SaveCyclops.org. My name is Matt Pelser. I'm with the Central Indiana Grotto. Until next time. Kill nothing but time.